Thank you for being an amazing supporter of the 10X Podcast Group, home to the history of the Caribbeans. We're excited to have you as a valued member of our growing community. If you haven't already, we'd love for you to follow us on your favorite podcast platform. Your likes, comments, and reviews mean so much to us. They help us reach a wider audience and inspire us to keep sharing these incredible stories. With new episodes released daily, your feedback plays a crucial role in shaping our content and making it even better. Your dedication and enthusiasm drive our mission to document and celebrate the rich history of the Caribbean. We're deeply grateful for your support. Today, we're thrilled to present Guadeloupe Episode 1, a captivating story tracing the journey from the island's earliest settlers to the present day. So sit back, relax, and join us as we guide you through this fascinating chapter in Caribbean history. Enjoy the journey. Chapter 1, The Dawn of Civilization, The First Inhabitants. Long before the world knew of Guadeloupe, before European explorers charted its shores, and before its name was spoken beyond the Caribbean waves, the island was a silent witness to the rhythm of time. It was a land of lush rainforests, rivers coursing through valleys, and mountains standing like ancient sentinels against the sky. It was here, thousands of years ago, that the first humans arrived, forging a life in the embrace of an untamed paradise. These were the Arawaks, a people of peace, artistry, and deep spiritual connection to the land and sea. They came not as conquerors but as settlers, their canoes slicing through the turquoise waters as they followed the ocean currents from the coasts of South America to the scattered islands of the Lesser Antilles. The journey to Guadeloupe was perilous, a test of survival against the vastness of the open sea. The Arawaks, skilled in celestial navigation, read the stars and the shifting patterns of the waves, guiding their hollowed-out canoes across the expanse of the Caribbean. When they landed upon the shores of Guadeloupe, they found an island abundant in resources. A place where rivers teemed with fish, forests bore fruits and medicinal plants, and the land itself seemed to welcome them with open arms. Here, they established their ukiyeks, small villages composed of circular huts called bohayos, crafted from palm fronds and woven thatch, each a testament to their harmonious existence with nature. Their society was communal, governed by a cacique or chief, who ruled with wisdom and fairness. The cacique was both leader and spiritual guide, mediating conflicts, ensuring food was fairly distributed, and presiding over ceremonies that honored the spirits of nature. The Arawaks worshipped the gods of the sky and sea, their rituals echoing through the forests in song and dance, their hands shaping clay into vessels, and their minds weaving stories into oral traditions that bound them together as one people. They cultivated cassava, sweet potatoes, maize, and tobacco, their knowledge of the land passed from generation to generation. Women were the keepers of agriculture, while men fished and hunted, crafting intricate tools and weapons from stone and bone. For centuries, the Arawaks thrived, their villages dotting the shores, their canoes venturing between islands in peaceful trade with their kin. But peace was not to last forever. From the shadows of history, another people emerged, the Caribs, fierce warriors from the mainland, whose arrival would forever alter the fate of Guadeloupe. The Caribs were a seafaring and expansionist people, their prowess in battle striking fear into those who opposed them. Unlike the Arawaks, they did not seek to merely settle, they sought to dominate. The clash of these two civilizations was inevitable. The Caribs, skilled in ambush warfare and trained from childhood to endure pain, swept across the islands, claiming territories through bloodshed and conquest. Their canoes, sleek and swift, cut through the waters like sharks hunting their prey. When they landed on Guadeloupe, it was with fire and steel, their war cries echoing through the trees as they struck at Arawak settlements with ruthless efficiency. The Arawaks, unaccustomed to such relentless aggression, fell before them, their villages burned, their people taken captive or slain. Some fled to the mountains, seeking refuge in the island's dense interior, while others fought to the bitter end, their spears clashing against the hardened wood of Carib bows. Over time, the Caribs established their dominance over Guadeloupe, absorbing the remnants of Arawak culture even as they reshaped the island in their own image. They adapted Arawak agricultural practices, yet their society remained centered on warfare, their men trained from youth to raid and conquer. They took Arawak women as wives, blending the bloodlines of the past with the warriors of the future, ensuring that traces of the old world endured even in the age of the new. As centuries passed, Guadeloupe remained a bastion of Carib strength, its warriors feared across the Caribbean. But the echoes of the Arawaks never truly faded, for in the whispers of the wind, in the rustling of the trees, in the songs sung beneath the moon, their spirits endured. They had been the first to call this land home, the first to shape its rivers and plant its fields, the first to see the beauty of an island that would soon become the heart of many struggles and the prize of many empires. Yet, even as the Caribs stood victorious, the greatest challenge lay on the horizon, a challenge neither Arawak nor Carib could foresee. For across the vast ocean, beyond the sunset's reach, wooden ships carried men with pale skin and burning ambition, their eyes set upon the riches of the Caribbean. And with their arrival, the fate of Guadeloupe would change once more, setting the stage for a history defined by conquest, survival, and the resilience of a people who refused to be forgotten. Chapter 2. The Age of Discovery, Columbus and First Contact, 1493. The tranquil shores of Guadeloupe, once only known to its indigenous inhabitants, stood on the brink of an irreversible transformation. For centuries, the Caribs, having established dominance over the land, thrived in a world governed by the rhythm of nature and the might of warriors. Yet, far beyond the rolling waves, across the vast Atlantic, forces stirred that would alter the fate of the island forever. In the late 15th century, the ambitions of European empires collided with the uncharted expanse of the New World, leading to an encounter that would reverberate through history. The year 1493 marked the arrival of Christopher Columbus to Guadeloupe, an event that would set into motion the waves of conquest, colonization, and cultural upheaval. Columbus's second voyage to the Americas was vastly different from his first. This was not merely a voyage of exploration, but an expedition of expansion and dominion. Commissioned by the Spanish crown, he commanded a fleet of 17 ships, carrying over 1,000 men, livestock, and supplies necessary for the establishment of permanent colonies. Unlike his first voyage, which was characterized by cautious diplomacy with indigenous peoples, this journey bore the markings of imperial ambition, a prelude to the age of European supremacy in the Caribbean. As Columbus's fleet approached the Caribbean archipelago, he charted islands never before seen by European eyes, naming them in accordance with Spanish religious and cultural references. On November 4, 1493, the expedition reached the shores of Guadeloupe, a land covered in lush forests, cascading rivers, and mountains that loomed like silent witnesses to history. He named the island Santa Maria de Guadalupe de Extremadura, after the Spanish Virgin Mary, marking the beginning of a new era for the island's identity. Upon arrival, Columbus and his men were greeted not by the Arawaks, who had long been displaced, but by the Caribs, fierce warriors who had carved their legacy into the land. Initial encounters were fraught with tension. The Caribs, unlike the Tainos Columbus had encountered in the Greater Antilles, were not docile or easily subdued. They were proud, battle-hardened, and suspicious of these foreign visitors who arrived in colossal wooden ships, carrying metal weapons that gleamed in the tropical sun. Their traditions dictated that intruders were to be met with hostility, and their encounters with other indigenous groups who had suffered under European hands only reinforced their wariness. Columbus, aware of the Caribs' reputation for warfare, approached with calculated diplomacy, yet his men, driven by the desire for gold and conquest, clashed with the island's warriors. The first skirmishes erupted when the Spanish attempted to take supplies and explore inland settlements. The Caribs, skilled in guerrilla warfare, launched sudden and swift attacks, striking at the invaders from the dense undergrowth of the rainforest. Their knowledge of the terrain gave them an advantage, but the Spaniards' superior weaponry and armor eventually forced them to retreat. Among Columbus's priorities was the capture of indigenous people to be taken back to Spain as evidence of the New World's riches and inhabitants. In a brutal demonstration of European dominance, the Spanish seized Carib men, women, and children, shackling them in iron and forcing them aboard their ships. Some resisted, preferring death over enslavement, while others were taken against their will, bound for a world beyond the horizon that they could scarcely imagine. These early abductions marked the beginning of an era of forced labor, cultural destruction, and irreversible change for the people of Guadeloupe. Despite the hostilities, Columbus and his men left Guadeloupe within a matter of days, sailing onwards to explore the greater Caribbean. Yet, his brief landing had set the foundation for future Spanish ambitions in the region, and more significantly, it alerted the European world to the existence of an island that, until then, had remained untouched by foreign empires. In the years to come, Spain, France, and Britain would battle for control over the island, each seeking to exploit its wealth, its land, and its people. For the Caribs, Columbus's arrival was not merely an encounter, it was an omen. The world as they knew it was changing, and despite their resilience, they would soon face adversaries whose hunger for dominion would surpass anything they had ever known. The arrival of Europeans heralded the dawn of conquest, and Guadeloupe would never be the same again. Chapter 3: The Era of Colonization, French Conquest and Settlement, 1635. Guadeloupe, once a land dominated by the fearless Caribs and briefly touched by the ambitions of Columbus, found itself at the crossroads of European imperial expansion in the 17th century. By this time, the Caribbean was no longer a distant and unknown region. It had become the battleground of European powers, vying for dominance over its rich lands, strategic ports, and the lucrative trade networks that promised vast fortunes. The year 1635 marked a pivotal moment in Guadeloupe's history, as French forces set their sights on the island, intent on claiming it for the expanding empire. What followed was a brutal conquest, the suppression of the indigenous Carib population, and the establishment of one of the most enduring colonial societies in the Caribbean. The French arrival in Guadeloupe was led by Pierre Belin d'Isnambuc, a seasoned adventurer and privateer who had already established a presence in Martinique and St. Kitts. D'Isnambuc and his successor, Charles Leonard de l'Olive, arrived under the auspices of the Compagnie des Isles de l'Amérique, a chartered company authorized by Cardinal Richelieu to expand France's colonial holdings in the Caribbean. They landed on the shores of Guadeloupe with a clear mission: to secure the island, subjugate the indigenous inhabitants, and establish a thriving plantation economy that would supply France with sugar and other valuable commodities. However, Guadeloupe was not an uninhabited prize awaiting European claim. The Caribs, who had resisted Spanish incursions for over a century, were well aware of the growing European presence in the Caribbean. Unlike the Spanish, who had engaged in sporadic but largely unsuccessful attempts to colonize the island, the French came with a determined force, ready to engage in systematic warfare. The initial encounters were characterized by tense negotiations, but when it became clear that the French sought total control, the Caribs resisted with ferocity. For years, the Caribs waged a guerrilla war against the French invaders. Using their knowledge of the terrain, they ambushed European troops in the dense forests, striking swiftly before retreating into the mountains. Their resistance was not just a fight for survival, but a battle to protect their land, culture, and way of life. However, the French, equipped with superior weaponry, naval support, and a growing number of settlers eager to claim land, gradually gained the upper hand. The tide of war turned in favor of the colonizers, and by the late 1640s, the Carib resistance had been largely crushed. Those who survived were either killed, enslaved, or forced to flee to neighboring islands such as Dominica and St. Vincent, where remnants of their communities would persist for centuries. With the Caribs subdued, the French set about transforming Guadeloupe into a colonial stronghold. The island was divided into large agricultural estates, each dedicated to the cultivation of cash crops such as tobacco, cotton, and later sugarcane. These plantations required vast amounts of labor, leading to the introduction of African slaves, who would become the backbone of the colonial economy. The early days of settlement were fraught with hardship. Disease, food shortages, and conflicts with rival European powers threatened the colony's survival. But the promise of wealth and France's commitment to expanding its global influence ensured that Guadeloupe would not be abandoned. Over time, Guadeloupe evolved into a structured colonial society, governed by French officials and sustained by the relentless exploitation of enslaved labor. The social hierarchy was rigid. French landowners and colonial administrators sat at the top. Free European settlers occupied the middle class, while enslaved Africans and surviving indigenous people formed the oppressed underclass. Laws were enacted to reinforce these divisions, most notably the Code Noir, a set of regulations that codified the treatment of enslaved people and solidified the system of racial stratification. The economic boom driven by sugarcane cultivation brought immense wealth to the colony and its French proprietors, but it came at a staggering human cost. The brutal conditions of plantation labor, the merciless treatment of enslaved people, and the constant fear of rebellion defined life in 17th century Guadeloupe. Resistance did not vanish with the Caribs. Enslaved Africans fought back in their own ways, through rebellion, escape, and the establishment of Maroons, communities of fugitive slaves who waged their own war against the colonial order. By the end of the 17th century, Guadeloupe had become an integral part of the French colonial empire. The struggle for control had left an indelible mark on its history, setting the stage for future conflicts, revolutions, and the eventual fight for freedom. The legacy of colonization, the destruction of indigenous society, and the rise of the plantation economy would define the island's trajectory for centuries to come. Chapter 4: Sugar, Slavery, and the Plantation Economy, 1650s to 1700s. With the French conquest of Guadeloupe firmly established, the island's transformation into a colonial economic powerhouse was inevitable. At the heart of this transformation was sugarcane, a crop that would dictate the social, political, and economic structures of Guadeloupe for centuries. What began as a modest agricultural effort quickly evolved into a vast and exploitative plantation system, sustained by the forced labor of thousands of enslaved Africans. This chapter explores the rise of the sugar economy, the brutal realities of the transatlantic slave trade, the lives of those who toiled under extreme oppression, and the emergence of resistance and rebellion that continually threatened the foundations of French colonial rule. The birth of the sugar empire. By the mid-17th century, European markets had developed an insatiable appetite for sugar, making it one of the most valuable commodities of the age. The French, recognizing the potential for wealth, expanded their colonial plantations in the Caribbean, with Guadeloupe becoming one of the most profitable territories under their control. The introduction of West Indian sugarcane, Saccharum officinarum, led to the rapid expansion of agricultural estates. These plantations were owned by French settlers, many of whom had received land grants from the Compagnie des Isles de l'Amérique. The production of sugar required extensive labor, intensive land cultivation, and specialized knowledge of processing techniques, all of which were achieved through a combination of European oversight and African enslavement. By the late 17th century, sugar plantations covered large swathes of Guadeloupe's fertile land, altering both the island's landscape and its demographic composition. The transition from subsistence farming to monoculture reshaped the island's economy, making it highly dependent on the trade networks controlled by France. The transatlantic slave trade and the human cost. The profitability of sugar came at a devastating human cost. To meet the labor demands of the plantation economy, the French engaged heavily in the transatlantic slave trade, forcibly transporting thousands of Africans from the coasts of West and Central Africa to Guadeloupe. Captured men, women, and children were crammed into ships, enduring the horrific conditions of the Middle Passage, where disease, malnutrition, and abuse led to unthinkable suffering. Those who survived the journey arrived in Guadeloupe, only to face the horrors of plantation slavery. Upon arrival, the enslaved were sold at auctions and assigned to plantations where they would spend their lives working under excruciating conditions. They were branded, given new names, and stripped of their identities in an effort to break their spirits and sever their ties to their homelands. Plantation owners relied on strict hierarchies and harsh disciplinary measures to maintain control, enforcing draconian laws designed to suppress any form of resistance. Life on the plantations, a system of brutality. Life on Guadeloupe's sugar plantations was defined by inhumanity and relentless labor. The enslaved population worked from dawn until dusk, enduring grueling tasks such as cutting sugarcane, processing it in boiling houses, and refining it into the lucrative product that fueled European wealth. The process of sugar production was not only labor-intensive but also dangerous, with many laborers suffering severe injuries or death due to exhaustion, heat, and exposure to boiling syrup. The social hierarchy of the plantation mirrored the rigid structures of the French colonial empire. At the top were the Grand Blancs, large plantation owners, followed by the Petit Blancs, small landowners and tradesmen, and then the Gens de Couleur Libres, free people of color, who occupied an ambiguous status between servitude and limited autonomy. At the very bottom were the enslaved Africans, whose entire existence was dictated by the oppressive laws of the colony. The Code Noir, the institutionalization of slavery. In 1685, King Louis XIV issued the Code Noir, a decree that sought to regulate slavery in the French colonies. Though it claimed to provide certain protections for enslaved individuals, such as limits on punishment and religious instruction, it was ultimately a tool to enforce absolute control over their lives. The code dictated harsh penalties for those who attempted to escape, mandated conversions to Catholicism, and solidified the legal status of enslaved people as property rather than human beings. Despite its oppressive intent, the Code Noir also inadvertently created legal avenues that some enslaved individuals used to gain manumission, leading to the gradual emergence of free Black communities in Guadeloupe. These communities, though still subject to racial discrimination, would later play a role in the abolitionist movements of the 18th and 19th centuries. Resistance, rebellion, and the spirit of freedom. Slavery in Guadeloupe, as in the rest of the Caribbean, was never passively accepted. From the moment enslaved Africans arrived on the island, they resisted their captors in ways both overt and subtle. Some engaged in acts of sabotage, breaking tools and slowing down work, while others plotted revolts that shook the foundations of the colonial establishment. One of the most significant forms of resistance was maroonage, the act of escaping plantations and forming maroon communities in the mountainous regions of Guadeloupe. These communities, composed of runaway slaves, often waged guerrilla warfare against colonial forces, striking plantations, freeing other enslaved people, and creating autonomous societies beyond French control. The fear of these maroon groups led plantation owners to deploy brutal crackdowns, but despite these efforts, maroon resistance remained a persistent challenge to the system of slavery. Slave revolts, though ruthlessly suppressed, became increasingly frequent as the 18th century progressed. The memories of resistance in neighboring colonies, particularly the Haitian Revolution of 1791, inspired enslaved people in Guadeloupe to dream of freedom and to take action against their oppressors. Each act of defiance, each whispered meeting in the dead of night, brought the colony closer to the abolitionist movements that would eventually dismantle the institution of slavery. The legacy of the plantation economy. By the early 18th century, Guadeloupe had solidified its position as one of France's most valuable Caribbean colonies. The wealth generated from sugar plantations fueled the expansion of the French economy, enriching merchants, aristocrats, and the monarchy itself. However, this wealth was built on the backs of countless enslaved individuals whose suffering was conveniently overlooked in the pursuit of profit. The legacy of this period continues to shape Guadeloupe society today. The descendants of enslaved people form the majority of the island's population, and the echoes of colonial oppression are still felt in economic disparities, land ownership conflicts, and social structures. Yet, amidst these struggles, Guadeloupe has also emerged as a beacon of resilience, a land where the strength of those who once toiled in the fields continues to inspire generations in the ongoing fight for justice, equality, and remembrance.